Support for this podcast comes from Avangrid.
This is definitely a blue-collar community, and I'm kind of a blue-collar guy.
Rick Sealscott didn't see himself as a farmer, but wasn't about to sell his grandparents' Ohio farm. An Avangrid wind farm pays millions to the community and landowners like him each year.
Farming's up and down, but the wind turbines give us steady income. We're holding on to the farm, and we're making money. And I would absolutely do it again.
Discover where energy meets humanity at avangrid.com.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, for weeks after mass protests and international pressure failed to unseat Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, it became clear that it would take defections from within his own regime to remove him from power. Now, secret documents leaked to my colleague Nick Casey suggest that people around Maduro are starting to turn on him. It's Friday, May 3rd. Nick, what happened at the beginning of this week in Venezuela?
It's around sunrise, Tuesday morning, and Venezuelans wake up to this video, which has suddenly appeared.
Pueblo de Venezuela, muy buenos días.
And it's Juan Guaidó.
Como ustedes saben, nuestra lucha ha estado siempre enmarcada en la Constitución.
Guaidó's the leader of the National Assembly. They're very used to seeing him. He's been saying that he is the legitimate president of Venezuela for months, and that he's going to topple Nicolas Maduro.
En construir capacidades en el marco siempre de nuestra Constitución.
But he hasn't been able to do that so far. Except in this video, suddenly things look different. He's standing on a military base.
La familia militar.
He's got National Guardsmen standing behind him.
Acompañarnos en esta gesta, como siempre hemos hecho.
And he's saying the moment has come.
El momento es ahora.
This is it. Everybody is going to start to rebel right now. These men behind me are on my side. And it's only a matter of time till the rest of the country is going to be as well. Come out to the streets, come out and join us. The moment is at hand.
La calma y la cordura, en este momento del coraje y la cordura, para que llegue la calma a Venezuela.
And then when you look behind him in the video, there's another man that everybody in Venezuela recognizes, but hasn't seen in a while. It's Leopoldo López, who is a political prisoner, the most famous political prisoner in the country, who's been sentenced to a almost 14-year jail sentence. But he's not in his house arrest. He's behind Juan Guaidó. He's with these military men, and all of them are saying, the time has come. This is the juncture. Get ready.
Valientes soldados, valientes patriotas, valientes hombres apegados a la Constitución han acudido a nuestro llamado.
He's been asking for the military to get on his side, to push Maduro out for months at this point. But there are now military that are behind him, and it looks like they're on his side. His message now is, we've got these guys here. There's a few of you left. Get on our side.
El primero de mayo empezó hoy.
We're going to do all of this today.
El cese definitivo de la usurpación empezó hoy. Contamos con el pueblo de Venezuela hoy.
And, you know, potentially it sounds like by the end of the day, Maduro is not going to be in power.
Dios los bendiga. Seguimos adelante. Vamos a lograr la libertad y la democracia de Venezuela.
Nick, what does this scene signal to you?
Well, it seems there's just suddenly a big blast of hope for the opposition that has been looking for some moment like this to say that they're going to get the upper hand in this months-long battle against Maduro. Mm-hmm. And this is also ricocheting out to Washington.
We see this now as a potentially dispositive moment in the efforts of the Venezuelan people to regain their freedom, which we fully support.
I got a call really early in the morning from someone over there saying that they had heard the Supreme Court justice was going to sign a memo saying that Guaidó was the president and the defense minister was going to suddenly defect from Maduro. And then also there's these rumors starting to circulate around D.C. that Maduro is ginning up a jet to get out of the country.
Well, Lauren, Kevin, we are just now learning that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says he believed early this morning that Nicolas Maduro was actually ready to flee Venezuela. He had a plane ready on the tarmac. Apparently, he was headed to Havana, Cuba. But Mike Pompeo is telling us that he believes the Russians talked him out of it. Also,
so I'm looking at this still in my bed at this point, and it all looks a little too good to be true for the opposition. The people they're talking about defecting have been loyalists for a long time. And if you look closely at this video, you can't even see how many soldiers are actually standing behind him. There's no one from the top ranks of the military that's there. So what's clear is it's going to be a long day, but it's not clear who's going to be the victor.
So what actually happens?
So people start to gather. They come out for Guaido's call. They come out to the military base where he's at, and someone opens the door, and people start to trickle in. Leopoldo Lopez is standing next to a machine gun. Looks like he's ready to do battle.
Acompañar al pueblo. Comenzó el cese de la usurpación, Venezuela. Buenos días, Venezuela.
There are people in the streets now, large groups of people in Altamira, which is the main opposition neighborhood. They start to clash with the military that have been sent out. There's this scene that starts circulating on social media of an armored vehicle that's running over the protesters. Suddenly, waves of people are coming into the hospitals with these injuries from rubber bullets, from getting hit by the vehicles that are being sent after them. Caracas turns into pandemonium for a number of hours. While this question of who is going to take the countries is getting decided, as this happens, the people who were mentioned to me as the defectors start to get onto Twitter and say, they're on Maduro's side. So it looks like things aren't going well for Guaido. And then
la primera imagen de Leopoldo López Libre llamando al pueblo a salir a las calles a rebelarse.
Later in the afternoon, news comes out that Leopoldo López, that had gotten out of his house arrest, is now hiding in an embassy.
Decidieron refugiarse en la embajada de Chile.
That doesn't look good. And by evening, by nightfall, it looks like there's just been another battle in this long war that Maduro again has won. He's clearly the president. He's clearly in charge of the state. And Guaido is back to where he was to begin with, which is the leader of the opposition that's saying he's the president, but isn't.
So by the end of the day, the forces around Guaido have been clearly defeated, and his close ally, Leo López, is literally in hiding.
It's one giant revolution that starts back to where it began. One big circle.
So it feels like this has been the story of the past few months, that the opposition movement that Juan Guaido is leading gains momentum. It seems like the military might flip against Maduro and he might be ousted. And yet the military ends up staying with him and he remains in power and the opposition's momentum kind of fizzles.
Yeah, this cycle has repeated itself so many times. The opposition keeps trying to get the Venezuelan deep state, which is all of these people from the security establishment to the armed forces, the ones that are really holding up Maduro at this point, and they never seem to be able to get that.
Mm-hmm.
What you see in Venezuela is that it's having to use the deep state to run the state because it's no longer a democracy. And at the end of the day, yeah, it looks like this was just another one of these failed attempts from the opposition to try to be able to get the deep state on their side. They haven't been able to get the military to join them fully. They haven't been able to get the secret police to get on their side.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't been able to get these people that are actually the ones in control of the country to join the opposition. At least it doesn't appear that they have. But on my desk that day is a dossier. And it tells maybe a different story of kinds of fractures that you can't see that are playing out within Mr. Maduro's government.
And what is this dossier?
It's a stack of documents that tells a history of a man named Tariq El-Aissami, who's one of the most central people to the government right now after Mr. Maduro. He's one of his chief confidants. He's a person that you see almost every time that Maduro is going out onto a stage. He used to be the vice president. He's one of the most powerful men in the country.
And what does this stack of documents tell you about him?
It says that somebody in the intelligence agency was trying to investigate this man. And they had a lot of suspicions, not just of him, but also of his family, having been involved in everything from bringing in militants into the country from the Middle East to trafficking drugs within his own country.
Wow.
So, for example, halfway into this dossier, you start to come across documents from the Attorney General's office talking about what looks like a major drug bust that took place on the border of Brazil and Venezuela. Mm-hmm. The agents came to these empty warehouses, or warehouses they thought were empty, and they suddenly came across 140 tons of urea, which is one of the components that you use to make cocaine. Turned out these actually belonged to one of the biggest drug traffickers in the country. But the man who came out in these documents as the legal representative of that drug trafficker was Tariq El Aissami's cousin. As the case works its way up through the courts, Tariq El Aissami's star is starting to rise in leftist politics. And what you see in the dossier is that ultimately the cocaine ingredients are returned back to the drug trafficker. And the implication is this had something to do with Tariq El Aissami.
But why is this significant right now in the context of all of this political turmoil going on in Venezuela?
This gets to the core, I think, at what makes Venezuelans angriest the most. It's not just that you don't have food in Caracas, you don't have medicine or water or electricity. It's the fact that the government may be the source of your woes because of the level of corruption and how much they've pillaged from the state. While you're starving, someone else is a billionaire, and they may have made that money off of drug trafficking. Mm-hmm. There used to be a term still used called boligarchs, which refers to the people that had benefited from the Bolivarian Revolution, the left-wing revolution that took place in Venezuela, and had been able to make off with millions from the state. This is the center of what this movement is about. This is why people want Maduro out, is because many of them are looking for someone who they can trust. And what these documents are saying is Tariq El Aissami isn't one of them. And the other reason why this is important is because of how we got this information. This is information which came from Maduro's own security establishment. So it not only shows that they were suspicious of the people who were running the government, just like the people in the streets, but they also wanted others to know about this. The fact that they were willing to give these papers to reporters from the New York Times shows that that united front that Maduro wants to show isn't really there. That there's something a lot more complicated going on under the surface right now.
So, Nick, you're saying that the fact that you're able to tell this story, to see this dossier, is significant unto itself because it means that there are people in Maduro's government, specifically, it sounds like in his intelligence apparatus, who aren't as united or loyal to Maduro as he would have us believe.
These documents came from someone who has held very high rank in Venezuela's intelligence community. And the fact that they're published in the Times shows that there is something going on with the spies in the country. I can tell you this person was a true believer in the government for years, but doesn't believe it anymore and has some real doubts about who is running the country right now. And I think the goal in handing over documents like this was trying to show the rest of the world that the people running Venezuela couldn't be trusted. I think it was that simple. If you're a spy, you have access to all kinds of information, and your power is when you give that information out, when it's released. Turning something secret into something public is a huge thing when it comes to espionage. And this is what was happening. This is the kind of stuff that once compiled shouldn't see the light of day if you're in the intelligence community. This is stuff which are basically state secrets. And to put these out in a manner that they're going to get published for the world to see, it's making a big statement about who you want to see in charge of Venezuela.
So, Nick, you have always made clear to us that what really matters is what happens to the military. If there are mass defections from the military, that would almost assuredly mean the end of the Maduro regime. What about the intelligence community? What happens if they start to defect?
Each are constituents which are key to keeping Maduro in power. both are looking at the other to see which is going to take the first move.
Hmm.
And I think these play off of one another. So it's a dynamic which is really important.
Does that mean that even though it felt like Juan Guaido's latest call for the Maduro government to turn on him, even though it looked like that fizzled, maybe actually it's kind of working because you're seeing this deep state actually begin to break away from Maduro in a pretty meaningful way?
Yeah, the thing that you've got to remember is that the protesters are outside right now. They got quashed, but they're not inside the presidential palace. If something is starting to break inside, that's a much more scary situation for Maduro. Those are the people that Maduro is seeing when he's at these cabinet meetings. And if he's just gone through this day on Tuesday where the U.S. said that there were top officials about to betray him, and then by the end of the week, he's seeing all of these pages of information that had been assembled by his intelligence agency getting published in the New York Times.
Mm.
If he's looking around these cabinet meetings and he doesn't know if he can fully trust these people, it makes you think that you don't know what the next step is. And how am I going to keep myself in power?
So Guaido's call is actually being answered by the most dangerous people imaginable to Nicolas Maduro, which are powerful individuals within his government.
Exactly. Remember, the reason why J. Edgar Hoover was so feared in the U.S. was because he had information on presidents.
Mm-hmm.
These presidents, more than anyone, fear the people running their intelligence agencies. Those people can be used to squash their opponents, but they can also turn on them too. And I think that's one of the fears that the government has.
And so this dossier is no doubt a kind of message to Maduro that the intelligence community could very well have the same kind of information about him.
So I've seen the file on Tariq El-Aissami, Maduro's confidant.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's a file that's there on Maduro, that's something that Venezuelans would really want to see. And that file would be a lot more damaging.
Nick, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Michael.
We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by Amelia Perez, Zoe Saldana, Carla Sofia Gascon, and Selena Gomez, star in director Jacques Audiard's audacious, genre-defying movie, hailed as the year's best picture. An electrifying odyssey boasting tour de force performances, liberating song and dance, and bold visuals. The London Standard calls it a work of brilliance. Time hails it an exuberant ode to human possibility. And Vanity Fair raves, there is no other movie like Amelia Perez, a thrilling reminder of the limitless potential of this medium. On Netflix in the US, UK, and Canada.
This podcast is supported by ACLU. The ACLU knows exactly what threats a second Donald Trump term presents, and they are ready with a battle-tested playbook. The ACLU took legal action against the first Trump administration 434 times, and they will do it again to protect immigrants' rights, defend reproductive freedom, safeguard free speech, and fight for all of our fundamental civil rights. Join the ACLU today to help stop the extreme Project 2025 agenda. Learn more at ACLU.org.
Hey, it's John Chase.
And Mari Uehara.
From Wirecutter, the product recommendation service from the New York Times. Mari, it is gift-giving time. What's an easy gift for someone like under 50 bucks?
So in our Gifts Under 50 guide, we have this super cute palm-sized Bluetooth speaker. It comes in an array of cool colors. It's waterproof. You can bring it anywhere. I want one for my garden.
I love it. Check out all of Wirecutter's gift recommendations for yourself and everyone else at nytimes.com/holidayguide.
Here's what else you need to know today.
What is deadly serious about it is the Attorney General of the United States of America was not telling the truth to the Congress of the United States. That's a crime.
On Thursday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi accused Attorney General William Barr of lying to Congress when he testified that he was unaware of concerns from special counsel Robert Mueller about how Barr had summarized Mueller's conclusions of the Russia investigation. That claim now appears to be contradicted
by a letter sent to Barr by Mueller that laid out Mueller's concerns about Barr's summary.
Madam Speaker, did the Attorney General commit a crime?
He lied to Congress. He lied to Congress. If anybody else did that, it would be considered a crime. Nobody is above the law, not the President of the United States and not the Attorney General.
Barr further antagonized congressional Democrats on Thursday by refusing to testify before the House Judiciary Committee, prompting that committee's chairman, Representative Jerry Nadler, to threaten to hold Barr in contempt of Congress.
What we saw today is, besides the attitude of contempt the administration has for Congress, what we saw is fear. Fear of effective cross-examination, period.
And.
But they say I've been banned for being dangerous and anti-Semitic from Facebook, then I will, quote, be purged. Purged!
Facebook said it had permanently banned several far-right individuals and organizations from all its platforms, including Alex Jones, the founder of InfoWars, and Louis Farrakhan, the black nationalist minister, who has repeatedly made anti-Semitic remarks. Facebook said that those banned had violated its policies against hate speech in their conduct on Facebook or outside of it, and that it would remove all accounts, fan pages, and groups affiliated with them. The decision is a sign that after years of criticism that it allowed bigotry to fester on its platforms, that Facebook will more aggressively crack down on it across its various platforms, which include Instagram and WhatsApp. The Daily is made by Theo Balcom, Andy Mills, Lisa Tobin, Rachel Quester, Lindsay Garrison, Annie Brown, Claire Tennisketter, Paige Cowan, Michael Simon Johnson, Brad Fisher, Larissa Anderson, Wendy Dorr, Chris Wood, Jessica Chung, Alexandra Lee Young, Jonathan Wolfe, Lisa Chow, Eric Krupke, Mark George, and Luke Vanderplug. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. Special thanks to Sam Dolnick, Michaela Bouchard, Stella Tan, Julia Simon, and Samantha Hennig. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you on Monday.